This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Hey, welcome back to the Ticket City Podcast. You already know the drill. If you hear this voice, that means Jeff Ketchum is not here, but we still got Alex Dunlap. We still have Dustin. We still have Jason. We still got four of the five, so four stars won't be too bad. Fellas, I'll start with Alex. We have football. We're going to have a football season. Big 12 has released its revised schedule. It looks like we've got a game going on against UTEP within the next 4 weeks. I just want to start with you getting your general reaction, because I wasn't quite sure what the Big 12 was going to do. Like, and the Big 12 was kind of the conference, that everything hung in the balance. And then they're the ones that actually decided to play football. So I'm going to start with everybody. Just give me your general reactions, knowing that football is going to be played. Alex, I'll start with you. Give me your thought process.
Never a doubt, right?
never a doubt. Especially after Saturday and all the doom and gloom that was coming out over the weekend.
It was just, I can't imagine how the kind of ball of stress I've been around here, hopefully not rubbing off too much on my family, just saying, like, you know, just wondering what the hell's going on here. That was weird, dude. I mean, over the course of the weekend, and then, you know, you start on Monday and Tuesday, you start hearing, you know, more positive news coming out from the SEC and the ACC, news from their medical experts, just out in public saying, like, look, what are we doing here? We're advising to stay the course. And it kind of a sort of a groundswell there coming into Tuesday, and then all eyes turned to the Big 12. And like I was telling you guys in the Slack, it was like basically the nomenclature across the sports world was mirrored exactly what I said. Like, people started to realize that it's like the Big 12 was going to be sort of a swing vote, or like a swing state in an election or something. It's like all eyes were on the Big 12. And, you know, of course, Anwar got the word from some of his sources and kind of told us in the background that, hey, you know, things could be looking like they could be on the rails here. You know, there's some pushback, but there's also some people that feel real good about what's happening. And it's been a roller coaster. I'm excited that we're moving forward with this. Football is moving forward to be played in the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC. People are talking about how it's going to be a weird season, or a season that doesn't count, or a season that's meaningless. To me, I feel like it's going to be a very meaningful season, one of the most meaningful given all of the circumstances. And also, if things can stay on track and stay on the rails with this setup this year, with these three conferences playing, I kind of think it's going to be kind of awesome. It's going to put a lot of extra focus on these teams that are playing. You're going to be able to get to know the players and the coaches and the schemes, because you're going to be seeing a lot of the same teams every week. It's going to be I feel like it's going to be something really neat. You know, that I just feel worst for the people who really wanted to play, or who depend on football, or who might have been in better – like the athletes who might have been in better situations had they actually gotten to play football, if that is indeed the case, in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. You know, a lot of those guys wanted to play, man. You know, a lot of those coaches wanted to play. A lot of those admins want to play. And you just wish them the best and hope that if they try and do whatever they want to do in the springtime, that they can make that happen. I'm still of the mindset that I just don't know how that'll work. So that's sort of where I am. Hopeful that we can stay on the rails here. Hopeful that everybody stays healthy, and hopeful that we can approach this with, you know, first and foremost, the safety of the players at the front of our minds, and have a great season of football that that everybody can enjoy.
I'll jump in. Like you, Alex, man, I'm just excited, relieved from a business perspective. I mean, jeez. I didn't know what the hell we were going to write about, or how that was going to affect just overall Orange Blood's experience if we had no football. So, selfishly, that's probably my biggest takeaway, is like, oh, I can just breathe. And like, you know what? Okay, we're going to have football. We can, you know, just write about, talk about football. I tell you what, like I was talking to my dad about this the other day, right after it came out and right after they released the conference schedule. And this was even before they'd released the date for the UTEP game. But I was like, I could get used to this 10-game schedule, man. Three off weeks during the season. I kind of like that. You know, you get a little bit of breathing room there. I don't like that recruiting is now going to be a dead period through the end of September. And I'll be honest, man, I don't know if they're going to allow official visits on recruiting at all before that December signing period, which is just so weird to me. No Thanksgiving football will be interesting. But, yeah, man, it's just a big relief, just a kind of a sigh of relief, a breath of fresh air, excitement. I'm like you, Alex, it's going to be a weird season. I get it, man. You know, you got teams like Ohio State that were legitimate championship contenders, and you'll have some people that will say, hey, this needs to have an asterisk by it. But I think once the season gets to playing, I think it's going to be really exciting. You know, I still have this fear in the back of my mind that, gosh, let's hope this thing stays on the rails. Like you said, Alex, we don't want to get a month into the season and then they have to shut it down for whatever, you know, or something like that. So I hope and pray that doesn't happen. For right now, man, I'm focusing on the positive and just really excited that the Big 12 made the decision they made.
Dustin, sorry about that. I put myself on mute, and I thought I had a really good segue going in, and then I realized I didn't. I was talking to myself. I was like,
Headphone issues, too, so yeah. I was kind of thrown off by everything.
I was like, why is Jason talking? Why is he talking over me? And I realized, So you've been on the emotional roller coaster, too, Dustin, since March. I mean, we've had the highs and lows, and, I mean, give me your overall thoughts before we start getting into specifics.
I was thinking back to when this all first started happening in March, and just, you know, Jason was talking about the business perspective and just the Orange Blitz community and stuff like that. And, you know, football's always been that thing that's kind of like hanging out in the balance, like that people were looking forward to. Like, if we can just get through these 5 months or 6 months or whatever it was, you know, hopefully we're going to have a football season. And so it was pretty anxious times, you know, when things were going back and forth and, you know, seeing the reports about the Big Ten, and we knew the Pac-12 was going to follow suit, and how the Big 12 was for at least a day, like the most powerful conference in the country, you know, because just the ACC and the SEC, I don't know if they were going to be able to move forward on their own with just two, if the Big 12 wasn't going to join them, because it's kind of like a majority vote almost. It's a little easier to power through with three out of the five instead of just doing it with two. So I'd say right now it's a relief. You know, this is something I wrote about some yesterday. It's a tough situation all around. I don't know. There's not really a true right answer. I think it's just, you're not going to be able to eliminate the risk no matter what. I hope that this can move forward successfully, and it, clearly they're planning on playing a season. You know, the Big 12 came out with the schedule, and I don't anticipate them pulling a Big 10 where they come out with the schedule and then 5 days later say, never mind, we're not going to play the season. So they're committed to it. The ACC seemingly committed to it. The SEC is definitely committed to it. We're just going to have to see how this stuff plays out. Fortunately, you know, what's kind of gotten lost in the last week about all this discussion is we haven't really seen many programs have issues with positive tests, at least just this week. You know, I think there was maybe an issue or two last week where a program had like three or four positive tests and kind of shut some things down. But that's still a really low rate among that many people being tested. But we haven't had that issue this week, so that's good, because we do have a lot of players back on campus going through workouts and like that. So maybe this thing can work. I don't really like to think of the alternative of no football season. So I think that these leagues are committed to giving it the best try that they could. You know, in a program like Texas, too, in a university like Texas, they invested a lot of time and a lot of money into preparing for trying to have a football season, because the alternative would just be, you know, emotionally, financially, it'd just be a big blow to everybody. So definitely some anxious times, and let's hope that, you know, that's kind of in the rearview mirror, and that as the Big 12 moves forward, aren't encountering a bunch of positive tests and can get this season thing going. And Jason, you brought up an interesting point about the off weeks. Texas went from no bye weeks basically in the Big 12 schedule to a couple. So that's kind of an interesting development for them. I mean, I think the Big 12 is a little bit less of a grind now that they've got those couple bye weeks in there as well, which is nice for us too. Although at this point I'd take football every single week for the next 6 months.
That's true.
Deal with it and just reap the benefits and enjoy it while we have
They get a bye week after Oklahoma, which I think can be beneficial. They get a bye week the second week of November. I'm looking at it. So, and then after that bye week, they get a home. No, I'm sorry. It's a tune up on the road against Kansas before they play a big game potentially against Iowa State. So the schedule really sets up pretty well for Texas,
Jason, there's three bye weeks. They play September 14th as the season opener.
Conference stuff.
I'm just saying from a season perspective, they have three bye weeks.
It's going to be awesome.
That's big. And also, too, I think I was looking at the schedule. I think Texas and West Virginia are the only two teams that don't have consecutive road games in the Big 12. So schedule, I think it's a better setup for them, certainly with the off weeks, but a better setup for them than what they were originally scheduled for, which was a pretty brutal grind.
I wonder, I've thought to myself, do you think, I'm just curious what everybody's perception of this, do you think the Pac-12 and Big Ten are regretting their decisions? Do you think that they just assumed everybody would follow suit when they just were so proactive in making those decisions to cancel their seasons? I wonder if they feel like they misplayed their hands, or do you guys think that they feel like that they made the right decision?
Well, it can't help when you have Big Ten coaches standing on the table saying that we still want to play football, right? So it shows that everyone wasn't on board as far as that decision goes. The one thing that it doesn't seem like any of those conferences were able to really reasonably explain was why they had to make this decision right now.
Yeah, and what changed so dramatically? And why so quickly, right?
Yeah, like they were never fully able to explain, like, okay, this is why this decision needs to be made today, as opposed to, you know, waiting it out or trying to give it a go.
Damn, MAC conference got the ball rolling for everybody.
Yeah, well, and again, look,
Ivy League
and the MAC. And, you know, to your point, though, and I'll let you guys jump in, it seemed like once those decisions were made, they just assumed that everybody else would go with it and try to do spring football, you know, on a conference call with Bob Bowlesby. You know, his thing was like, yeah, we have the data, they have data, and basically people just see it a different way. And the Big 12 doesn't see spring football as a viable option for so many reasons. Mainly what Bowlesby said was starting a football season in January, which is the spike of virus season. I mean, hell, we all have kids. We know what it's like when it starts getting, you know, in November and December, and all these kids got the flus and the colds and the pink eyes and all this other type of stuff. So, I mean, like, it just one from another. It's just, you know, these kids go to these petri dishes of schools and come home with everything. So, you know, starting in January doesn't seem to make any sense. I agree with you that I think they maybe reacted too soon. But, you know, Alex, I know you follow this stuff from a national perspective pretty well. Do you think they made that decision too soon? You think they overreacted? You think there's any regrets?
Yes, well, I mean, the Pac-12 was going to do it. Like, they were just ready to fold up as soon as the Big Ten did anything, right? They were waiting on the Big Ten. Then once they did, they had the okay. I get it. I just the idea of spring. I think this whole thing is spring football. This is just something that they're trying to say to themselves, to say, you know, at least we're working towards something. At least we have a plan that we're moving towards. People need plans.
Keep donors sending in money.
You can't just keep things in limbo where people talk, you know, it's like the people need plans. And so the plan is shifted right now, but that's a can getting kicked down the road. Are you really telling me that there's going to be a spring football season with the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and these other conferences that opted out of fall football, in which they're going to start, like Amwar said? I mean, do you start in January? Do you start? I mean, the kids don't get back to school until, you know, mid-January. I don't think I ever returned to campus when I was at Texas until, what, you go back around January 10th or something. It's always after the national championship. It's like the 10th or, you know, the 15th. So you would need a couple weeks of practice.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's usually like the 15th, 17th.
Something like that. It's mid. And so you would need to probably start practicing it around Christmas. Then you would have the season's 4 months long. So you go until till April, right around the NFL draft. You're going to have kids opting out like crazy for one thing. And then also we're talking basically a 10.5 month period where you're going to get out of playing football in, mid-April, possibly if there's a playoff or something like that you have, or any bowls after this thing, maybe creeping into what could be like May. Then you're going to go into summer, voluntary workouts on campus, start fall camp in what is always the first week of August, and then go through and play another 12 to 13, possibly 14 games. So you're telling me that over the course of 10 and a half months, you're going to be playing somewhere between 25 and 27, 28 games? That's not healthy. If all this is being done out of concern for the health of the student athletes, that's the most cockamamie backwards way that I've ever thought of to try and keep these guys healthy. They're not. And people say, well, they play spring ball and they do all that. Like, dude, spring ball is 15 practices. That's 15 practices. You don't go play a game against anybody. It's like it's so crazy that somebody would conflate the playing of an entire conference schedule season with what generally happens during the 15 practices of spring football. They're not remotely comparable. So to me, if this is about player safety, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, Bowlesby came out and said it's starting during the peak of virus season, and that's an issue that I literally didn't even think about, because the two issues that I think about are, one, player safety. It's like that's just dangerous. People who play football at any level know, man, you can't play that many games in that shorter period of time. And secondly, it's just with the NFL draft. Like, what are players going to do? I'm not sure that the NFL is going to move everything around to placate two conferences that sort of went rogue and made these early decisions. So I don't know how it's going to work. I don't foresee it happening. And if it does happen, I'll be really surprised, and I'll be interested to see how they make it work and what sort of protocols they can put in place, not only, for COVID transmission and the rest of it, but also to make sure that these kids aren't their bodies aren't getting too worn down.
Well, too, Alex, there's another can of worms here, which is, well, what does the roster sizes look like, right? Because you may have early enrollees.
There's that thing.
If you have early enrollees and with guys who are seniors who are getting an extra year of eligibility, does that mean a couple of conferences now get to carry, 110 scholarships for a year? And then you're going to have other conferences that are going to say, wait a second, so why are they able to have more guys than we are able to have, right? So you have that potential problem. And then are you really having a season with only two major conferences playing? I mean, at the end of the day, when the SEC is playing and the ACC is playing, and, those are the two headliners, and the Big 12 is going to be added in there. I mean, when 3 out of 2 have already gone and 3 out of 2 have already crowned some sort of national champion, and there's already been a Heisman winner,
but Ohio State will still claim a national championship. if they play 8 games and blow through everybody, they'll claim a national championship.
Actually, doesn't Texas A&M technically claim a national championship?
they'll claim one regardless. They'll find a way.
let's stay there for a second, Alex, with the draft. Jason, you did want to say something. So before I interrupted and moved on to the draft
part. No, I was just going to say, if they do play a two-conference season in, let's say they find a way to make an 8-game season. I mean, seriously, do they claim a second national championship? Do they try to have co-champions? I mean, do they not even factor in? I guess they don't factor in, but you'll never convince Ohio State if they go undefeated, if they play in the spring, that they're not some sort of national champion.
But they only play a conference schedule. I mean, they're a conference champ, but you can't have them versus the Pac-12 and say,
they'll put a banner up. It won't stop them, dude.
You can't make it off a conference schedule. So there'll be asterisks all the way around. One of the things I propose in a question to Catch, and I'll start with you on this one, Dustin, and I want to get everyone else's thoughts though. But you know, this is a year where, you know, you thought like, okay, Justin Fields is going to be a guy that highly coveted, so on and so forth, right? And you have a lot of these other things, but you have Sam Ehlinger, Sam Cosmi, Caden Stearns, Joseph Asai. These are guys who are NFL prospects. You know, I'm curious, Dustin, the advantage that these guys would seemingly have over Pac-12 and Big Ten guys seems to be huge and monumental because, you know, the thing I pointed out was a lot of these guys submit things to the draft committee, the advisory committee, and the majority of those guys received a grade that said, you're so-so, you need to go back to school. Well, if they don't have a junior season, a senior season, essentially all they still really have is that so-so film that told them they need to go back to school. And you have other guys, especially with specifically at Texas, who have a real advantage to say, okay, listen, I put together 4 years. And by the way, my senior year looked like this. You know, we know what Joe Burrow was, a fifth round pick going into last year, and what he became. What kind of potential and what kind of advantage does it give some of these guys, especially at Texas, knowing that essentially the draft pool is going to be further diminished this year than in previous years?
Yeah, I think it does give them an advantage. I mean, we know these NFL guys, you know, they like to dive into the film and you know, the more film you have for those guys to dissect, as long as it's good film, I think a better opportunity you have to help yourself in terms of evaluation and things like that. And yeah, it's, I can imagine from a, you know, NFL personnel perspective in terms of decision-making for the draft and things like that, it's, it'd be tough to look at your board and, you know, you're trying to decide between a guy that played a full season and that you just saw him recently. You saw what his body looks like. You saw how he moves. You saw all these sorts of things. And then you're comparing him to a guy you hadn't seen on the field since 2019, you know, and maybe he's a guy that's an underclassman and he wasn't a starter as a freshman or something like that. So I do think it affords those guys an opportunity to really help themselves as opposed to those guys in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten who, you know, maybe we're on the verge of a really good season and to really help themselves maybe from becoming like a second day guy to a first day guy or something like that. I got to think that those guys in those leagues that are playing on plane right now, it's an opportunity for them. I think it's huge for a guy like Sam Ehlinger. You know, you mentioned just the quarterback pool kind of dwindling in terms of those high profile guys. Now that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 right now are out of the equation, give Sam Ehlinger more of an opportunity to kind of rise to the top of that quarterback group and really help himself. You got like Sam Cosmi, you know, that rise to the top of that offensive tackle list. And you know, some of those DBs, you know, maybe they're a little bit more attractive with a strong season on tape as opposed to some of those guys that didn't play and were kind of in the same position that were needing that type of season to really propel themselves. So yeah, I think it's an advantage for those guys. I think the NFL guys are going to want to, they're going to want to see these guys play, you know, that's they always want to judge the tape and things like that and base their decisions off that. And, you know, the more tape you have, and especially if you've got tape in 2020, as opposed to not having it at all, anything at all, I think that's an opportunity to really help yourself.
Alex, I mean, this is what you do for a living. You go to Mobile, the great city of Mobile, Alabama, every year. You also go to Indianapolis and you talk to scouts and all the time. I mean, your thought process on a guy that has a 2020 season versus a guy that has a 2019 season?
Well, I'm dubious that this whole spring football thing is going to work. So I, like, if it did, that would obviously add a new factor in here. The NFL would have to do something to sort of, you know, change, you know, it would have to concede some things on its own calendar to be able to make sure that, you know, that the teams could get their evaluators out there through the course of the season. But man, I was texting last night with one of my closest scout friends and just asking him, I was mainly just asking him about, you know, what it's like sort of being inside, you know, inside the ropes, as he called it, with being what they call a tier one employee of one of these teams. And He's just how much of this COVID test, like he has to get that brain swab every single day. He walks into that facility. It's crazy. But they're doing good work with it. But I was just like, man, I'll be interested to just, you know, whenever things settle down and, you know, the season gets underway and he's not under, you know, this pressure right now to have to figure out what the fuck they're like, what they're going to do, how the roads, like these scouts during this time of year, man, this is the time where they're getting their road schedules together. They are, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, you go to this game, you go to this game, you know, you're on the road. So geographically it's like setting up a tour. If you're putting a tour together for a band or something like that, there's a lot of logistical stuff. You got to get together. You got to figure out when you're going to be in this town. Are you going to be in the town a few days before the games? So you can go to some practices. What are some other universities sort of around this town where I can floss over 75 miles east to go to a practice at this other university. And then I can come back for this game that's going to be here. And then next week, then the game's going to be here. And now it's like, not only, you know, is your pool of available games for the fall, you know, now dwindled down to these three conferences. It's like, what do you do with evaluating the 2019 tape on these players if you're not going to get to see them play in 2020? And a lot of these really good players, I mean, we've already seen multiple Big Ten guys, and you know, we already know what's going to happen with, you know, Rondale Moore. You know, we think we know what's going to happen with, you know, Justin Fields and some of these others. It's like, how does that even go? How do you put them up on the same board with the players who you've seen play in the year 2020? And we've talked about it on Slack, just about like, what would this have meant for Joe Burrow? Like, what would this have meant for Joe Burrow without a 2019 season? Where, you know, he just gets Joe Brady inserted into that offensive play calling scheme, and it's wheels up, and we see the best offense we've ever seen in all of college football history there, trotted out for LSU, and it's orchestrated by Joe Burrow, who nobody thought of as a first round pick coming into last year's cycle. And all of a sudden he's the Heisman Trophy winner, and he's the, you know, unanimous, you know, not unanimous, but consensus first overall pick in the NFL draft. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't know how they're going to do it. I know right now their heads are just scrambled about, they're just right now, scouts are just worried about logistically what they're going to be doing and how they're going to be setting up their schedules as far as what they can get out and see, what they can get out and do. There's also going to be protocols around these teams. Like they're still kind of a lot of these practices, and Omar, maybe you could speak to this. A lot of these practices, literally nobody outside the team is allowed. And they're wondering, like, are some teams going to say, like, no scouts are allowed at practice even? Like, what, like, are we going to be able to get our sideline passes at games and stuff? It's like, so there's a lot to deal with. It's just like with everybody else, man. There's a lot to deal with. It's a lot of extra pain in the ass that's come along with it. But I figure they're going to have a way to make it work. But I think even if you ask these scouts right now, they don't have exact answers about even what this is going to look like logistically this fall and possibly this spring, much less how they're going to wrap their heads around how they're going to do evaluations for guys who they don't have tape on for over a year.
I mean, practices are going to be closed. I mean, that practice is the thing what Jason alluded to. That's what I've been told. Like, they, you're not having that in there. Like, at the end of the day, at some point, it's more about getting through this season than trying to, you know, accommodate a bunch of people. So it's not about accommodating kids to come to practice and stand on the sideline so they can do that. It'll be very interesting to see how official visits are done, or if they are done at all this season, because again, you're trying to keep these kids in as much of a bubble as possible, which it's going to be really hard when you know, kids get back on campus, but trying to keep them in as much of a bubble as possible. So I definitely don't see that occurring or that happening. But I want to go back to you, Alex, but for something different, because a little bit of more of a news type of thing. Last night I put out the news that Marquez Bimage decided that he's going to opt out of this season due to, you know, COVID-19 concerns. He's the second Texas player that has done that. Daniel Young is the other person that decided that he's not going to play. Now, you know, Daniel was going to probably be, you know, the fourth string guy, you know, coming in at that point, unless barring an injury. So
wasn't necessarily a huge loss that Daniel wasn't going to be there. But Bimage is a guy that you had projected as a starter on that strong defensive end position. Just give me your take on how big of a blow that is, and kind of give me a rundown of what that depth chart looks like now.
Well, I had him projected as a potential starter. I said it was going to be him or Moro Ajomo, because that was the battle that we'd anticipated ever since Anwar, you've broken the news that Moro Ajomo was going to be not used at three technique, but rather used outside at the strong side defensive end. That was something that, you reported that, before the spring football season that never was ever started or ended or whatever happened with that in its existence. Look, what I've been worried about Moro Ajomo's ability to his ability. He doesn't really have a defensive end's body. Well, the one thing about him, do you remember Puna Ford was squatty, but kind of had some long arms, or definitely has some very long arms. Moro Ajomo is not really like Puna like that. Puna was his own guy, but Moro Ajomo has longer arms than you would think for his body size. And even though he's a little more thick and more, he just doesn't really look like your really long and lean kind of outside pass rush, defensive end. But I will say that I've heard from some people just sort of behind the scenes of practices that he is bending the edge. He is moving well. He's killing these dudes in some of these one-on-one pass rush drills with some of the hand moves that he's using, some of the stuff where, like I said, he's got some of those longer arms, some of the stuff that he's able to do with batting off counters and making sure that these offensive linemen can't get their hands inside on him. I've heard he's been looking very impressive, and I hadn't heard a thing about Bimage. And so when it goes without, maybe Bimage hadn't even been practicing. I don't know. Do you know, like, has he even been practicing?
I don't know. He left on Sunday.
Okay. So like, I don't even know, like I hadn't heard anything about Bimage, but I'd heard a lot about Ajomo. So I think Ajomo certainly, he steps right in, and maybe Dustin's truth or status will come through. Dustin's going to have an all truth or defensive line this year.
Yeah, it's going to be the all truth Taquan team,
Graham. Yeah, Taquan Graham lined up next to Moro Ajomo. But yeah, look, I think that behind him, it's going to be we've seen the photos of Alfred Collins. I've been around him. I've stood next to that guy. He's going to have to play, I think. I mean, Vernon Broughton probably is going to have to play at the three technique. There was talk about maybe Alfred Collins could play three technique. Maybe he could play strong side defensive end. I think Alfred Collins is going to have to – I mean, it's going to be him or Jacoby Jones that are going to be the primary backups to Moro Ajomo. I still don't know where Peter Mpagi is with his health. I'm not even sure that he would slip in at the strong side defensive end. I mean, I really think we're looking at a rotation of Moro Ajomo, Jacoby Jones, and Alfred Collins, because unless we're talking about super, super deep depth, I don't think that Daniel Carson or the true freshman, what's his, Sawyer Gorham Welch? I think both those guys slot in as more kind of, inside depth than guys that you would consider really viable at the defensive end. So I think those are the three amigos over there, man. I think it's Moro Ajomo, Jacoby Jones, Alfred Collins from where I stand right now. And it's certainly exciting for a true freshman like Alfred Collins, because here's the thing about him. He might eventually grow into that body of his, that long. He's so long and big and tall, but also really big. And it's like it's kind of like he's almost destined to fill out and get bigger, because you look at his hands and you look at his feet and you say, dude, this kid's like a Clydesdale, he's like a Great Dane puppy or something. It's like, it's like he still has more room to grow, which is very, very, very scary. If he weighs like 330 pounds at some point, and he's the same length with his arms and the same size, you have a mega, mega size defensive end on your hands. It's almost like you would want to move him inside. But for right now, with the way that his body's shaped right now, with the size he already is, he's already a mega defensive end body. And so it's almost like this year where he's still kind of, before his body, before he puts on another 20, 25 pounds. It's like right now his body's almost perfect to play defensive end. So like it'll be exciting to see what he's able to do this year. But yeah, I think that the main guy is more with Jomo. Certainly sucks to lose Marquez Bimage, because towards the end of last season in the bowl game, and I believe in the Texas Tech game, when he really started to kind of break out and look like he was going to be a guy that was going to make waves this year. He is a senior. I don't know if he's going to opt out and just try and go play in the NFL. I'm not sure that there's enough tape on him to where he would be, you know, drafted after opting out for a season. So hopefully he'll be able to come back and retain that year of eligibility in the year 2021.
Jason, like one of our things that we've talked about a lot on these podcasts is kind of the defensive line and some of the questions surrounding that unit. The departure of a Jomo, how is that a huge departure, you know, for this defensive line? Or do they just have other guys that they can just step in and plug and play, and do you think they'll be okay?
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I mean, no disrespect to Bimage, but it's not like – you're losing a guy that's head and shoulders. Right. Yeah, that's fine. You're not losing a guy that's head and shoulders above the other players on your roster. At least I don't think so. So, you know, you hate to lose anybody for depth purposes. Anybody who's in your two deep, you're probably going to need them. You're going to have to rely on them. You know, other guys are going to have to step up. You know, I think these young pups, you mentioned Alfred Collins. You know, I think he can probably step in right away. Vernon Broughton, potentially, you know, he's another big body that's probably pretty close to college ready. You know, Sawyer Gorham Welch is an interesting one. I hadn't really thought about him until Alex mentioned him, but this is he comes in, this kid's big and strong, you know, athletically he may have to kind of find his way there, but I mean, physically, I think he can hold up as a true freshman if you need him to and help in some spots. So I think they've got enough bodies to throw at the issue. You know, a lot of guys who are kind of flexible, who can play inside or outside. So, you know, it'd be nice to have Bimage. He's a veteran. He's been around. He's talented, but I don't think he's that talented where the drop-off from him to the other guys they're going to plug in is going to hurt him that bad. So I think it's a manageable loss.
Dustin, your thoughts?
I actually think this is a pretty big deal. Just looking at their roster and keeping in mind that this program – for the few years prior to this season was recruiting to a different defensive scheme. It was recruiting to a different defensive line usage and things like that. And, you know, I just look at the grouping of defensive linemen or projected defensive linemen. And I don't see many pure pass rushing types of guys. And I think that's something that Bimage was going to really give this program was, when he's in there, hey, you know what his skill set is. You let him loose to try to go get the quarterback. He's a really good athlete, surprisingly strong for his size. I mean, I remember looking back recently to a Twitter video of him a couple of years ago when he joined the 700-pound back squat club, which, you know, for a guy that with that kind of athleticism and that kind of size is really impressive to have that kind of power. He had a really good game against Texas Tech in the regular season when Texas finally started to use their defensive ends a little bit differently. So it's some of it's the talent in the fit in this new defensive scheme, I think, that could have really allowed him to be a guy that can have a presence off the edge as a pass rusher. But part of it too is I look at this group and I don't see many guys. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's a pass rusher. You know, that's a guy that you can stand him up or he can put his hand on the ground and he's just going to come off the edge and he's going to go get the quarterback. I don't know how many of those guys that they have besides Joseph Osai. You know, I really like Taquan Graham. I really like Moro Jomo, but those are kind of bigger bodied guys. You know, perhaps Taquan Graham could give them a little bit of that sort of presence off the edge. But they don't have many of those guys who kind of look like and you say, okay, that guy first step flying off the edge, really going after the quarterback with athleticism and sack potential. So I don't know where they're going to find another one of those guys. I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on Joseph Osai. Perhaps they got to get creative in the way they use their linebackers and bring in some pressure and things like that. But I think it's a fairly significant loss for Texas because they just don't have many defensive linemen that profile as those edge rushing types of guys.
Jason, what's going on from a recruiting perspective? You know, clearly Texas lost out on Tony Fields the second, which was kind of a little bit of a surprise because I thought, okay, the guy's coming here.
We talked about the podcast last week. We're like, He ain't going to, you know, he ain't going to
famous last West words. Virginia. Yeah. Famous last words. They're like, who's going to Morgantown? Well, I guess Tony Fields is. But outside of the grad transfer market, I mean, look, at this point, the grad transfer market has got to be closed, right? I mean, there's 4 weeks left until the season. So who you have is who you have. So from a recruiting perspective, what's the latest that you've gone? What you kind of let us know what's been going on?
Yeah, you've got it's funny. You've got people on our website saying, oh, they're going to be a flood of transfers. And I'm like, A, you don't have the scholarship numbers for that. B, like you said, I mean, they're a week into practice already. I mean, that's just going to – I don't see that happening. And honestly, I don't see these cancellations for Big Ten and Pac-12 really even impacting recruiting for high school prospects. And Rivals did a good job of reaching out to a lot of the commitments for those conferences, and they all pretty much said, hey, doesn't change anything for me. I mean, those guys are just worried about if they're going to play their own senior seasons. And as long as USC can tell its commitments and Ohio State, hey, sucks, we're not going to play in 2020, probably, maybe in the spring, but probably not. But we'll have a 2021 season. Well, that's when those guys will be arriving on campus. So I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on the recruiting landscape. Maybe I'm wrong. Hey, this is all uncharted territory for all of us. But for recruiting for Texas, in the last week, you know, they've picked up two commitments. Michael Mislinski, the offensive lineman, he committed – I'm trying to remember if he committed the morning. I guess he committed the morning before we recorded last week, I believe. But then they picked up a wide receiver, Jaden Alexis, from Florida over the weekend. And I made the terrible mistake of running to Lowe's. He commits when I – Dustin texted me. I got a handful of shit in my hands in Lowe's. I'm like, damn it. So I put the stuff back on the shelves and raced home and got Jaden on the phone. But, you know, nice little momentum there. You know, their offensive recruiting – has really been behind their defensive recruiting for Texas. Well, you had Mislinski to give them two offensive line commitments. You had Jaden Alexis to give them their second wide receiver commitment. Gunnar Helms, a recent tight end commitment. You've got some movement going on at running back recruiting this week. There was some big hubbub earlier in the week about LJ Johnson. And I did confirm with a source Tuesday night, I think it was, that, yeah, Texas feels suddenly pretty good about their chances there. And I'll go into some details on that in the war room tonight. But so that's looking much better. Now, on the flip side, if you're looking better for LJ Johnson, common sense would seem to indicate you're probably not going to get Kamar Wheaton if you're thinking you're going to get LJ Johnson. So I just released the recruiting board this morning. I had LJ Johnson at 60%, moved Kamar Wheaton down. I had bumped Texas up. I thought Texas was leading for Kamar Wheaton, but I still think Texas could get Kamar Wheaton if something happens with LJ Johnson. I think Kamar Wheaton really likes Texas. He has a great relationship with Stan Drayton. But if LJ Johnson's going to potentially be in this class, then you got to bump Kamar Wheaton odds down. So I put Kamar Wheaton at 40%. I bumped LJ up to, I believe it was 60%. So, yeah, they've got some momentum. Texas does on the offensive side of the ball, still holding on for a couple defensive linemen, and Terrence Cooks, the linebacker, looks really good. Andrew Makuba, the safety out of Austin, LBJ, I talked to him this week. He claims he's pretty open, but I think it's down to Texas, Clemson, and LSU. Tom Herman's very heavily involved, directly involved in that one. I like Texas's chances. I think this pandemic can help Texas in that one because he wanted to take visits, and he told me when we talked on Sunday, I think it was, he said, you know, I'm not sure, man. I may just have to go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and make a commitment without taking visits. Well, he's been to Texas four times. He's never been to Clemson. I don't think he's been to LSU. So that would seem to bode well for Texas. But like you said, hey, we thought the same thing with Tony Fields, right, Omar? So exactly. You don't – hey, they're teenagers, man. You can't predict everything, right? Or Tony Fields may not be a teenager, but close enough. So, yeah, they've got some momentum going on, and, they're up to 17 commitments. I need to double-check on this. I was told – gosh, I guess it's probably been 3 months now. It's kind of early in this pandemic that they were looking at taking 25, maybe even more than 25. I'm not sure that number maybe backed down a little bit because that's when everybody thought there was going to be a transfer free-for-all. That doesn't seem to have happened. So, you know, they're at 17 commitments. They're probably looking at, I would say, anywhere from maybe 6 to 8 more guys. So this 2021 class is starting to really take shape, and you can kind of see how those last spots might fill out. It's starting to really kind of come into focus.
You know, knowing that there will be a season, and do you think that it will affect them from a recruiting perspective? Because you're saying that, hey, a lot of guys are saying like, hey, we're good if I'm going to go to Ohio State or another program. But I mean, if you actually get a chance to watch a program
right.
this year, as opposed to the highlights from last year, is there any chance it gives Texas a recruiting bump just because yeah. you have guys who are seeing games being played?
Absolutely. Now, I think Texas, from a recruiting perspective, and that's interesting you said this, because if I can ever get around to recording my Something's Brewing, that's something I want to talk about. I think Texas benefits from potentially, if they don't go out and crap the bed, if they have a good season, Texas benefits from having a season as much or more than maybe any program in college football. Listen, Ohio State can take the year off, and it's not going to affect their recruit. Ohio State's Ohio State. I mean, just like same with Alabama, could take a couple years off if they need to. And it's not going to – I mean, Texas needs this season to build momentum. They need this season so offensive players and defensive players, honestly, but more offensive, can see the new schemes, and they can see what Mike Yurcich is doing, and maybe he's, you know, lighting the scoreboard up, and you just got guys making plays all over the field. This season, having a season, can benefit Texas immensely if things go well. You know, conversely, hey, if they go out and, you know, in a 10-game season and go 6-4, then it's going to hurt them. But I don't think anybody's really expecting that. So, yeah, I think that's a really good point on where I think Texas can maximize this, can benefit from this, certainly more so even than, like, you know, Oklahoma probably would have been fine if from a recruiting perspective, if they didn't have a season. Those recruits know what Lincoln Riley's offense can do. They know what it looks like. Texas is having to sell guys on, hey, this is what it's going to look like. You haven't seen it yet, but this is what it's going to look like. Well, now they can actually go out and show these recruits, and maybe it helps with a guy like LJ Johnson or Kamar Wheaton or Keetron Jackson, the wide receiver that they're recruiting. If he actually watches this offense for a couple weeks and says, hot damn, man, they're throwing this thing all over the field. And they're like marching up, you know, they look like Oklahoma's offense or Oklahoma State's offense when it's really clicking. Then that'll certainly help Texas' recruiting efforts.
Is there anything else that's going on, Jason? You said, you know, you're working on some things from the war room. So is there any other interesting tidbits we're going in before I go to Dustin and talk a little bit of hoops?
No, we can transition. I'm going to go player by player in the war room, just kind of going through where it stands with everybody. I think the running back movement is kind of the big thing, and then the Jaden Alexis commitment. Dead period has been extended. I mentioned this earlier, I think, on the podcast, now through the end of September. And so that really gives basically 2 months, October and November, for official visits. And let's be honest, man, I don't even know if those will happen. So just a weird, unpredictable, topsy-turvy recruiting cycle. I mean, guys are going to – they are committing, and they have committed sight unseen. I mean, Gunnar Helm and Michael Mislinski have both been to Austin to tour the campus on these self-guided tours. At least they've been able to do that. Jaden Alexis has never seen the campus. The other wide receiver, Casey Kane's, never been to Austin either. I don't think Alexis has even been to Austin either. They've done virtual visits and things. So, you know, it's going to be interesting these last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 spots. You might have a couple guys who commit sight unseen, but that's just kind of the world we live in right now. But, yeah, as for now, dead period has been extended through the end of September, and they keep pushing it back month by month. So there's, you know, if the current pattern seems to hold, probably in about a month, they'll probably extend it till the end of October, and we may get to December when it comes signing period with no opportunity for official visits.
These must be some hellified virtual tours that these guys are making, right?
I would love to sit in on one of those and just kind of see what they're showing them. I bet it'd be really – you know, I'd love to see and kind of compare, hey, what's Oklahoma doing? What's A&M doing? What's LSU doing compared to how Texas is doing its virtual visits? Texas has a lot that they can sell on virtual visits, from the facility upgrades, city of Austin, you know, academics things. I mean, so – you know, the people I've talked to that have done the virtual visits at Texas are like, oh man, they're freaking amazing. So, but you know, they should be. Texas and the city of Austin has a lot that they can show these kids.
Yeah, it sounds like that we went to Epcot and it would just have that like computer voice, you know, welcome to Austin. You know, I'm wondering who's doing a narration for that. So yeah, at some point, Jason, you gotta give us the
details. Gotta be Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, probably. I was gonna say, you know, it's McConaughey on there. You know, yeah, the Minister of Culture himself.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because you don't think it's Herb Hand, you know, with barbecue device. We probably shouldn't bring up Herb in the podcast. People start getting a little antsy on us. Dustin, you know, Andrew Jones was really active on Twitter, but what we didn't know is that he might have been at some hospital bed, like tweeting out half the damn time, because you kind of broke something this week that, oh yeah, by the way, he had some hip surgery recently. And, you know, kind of give us an update on what was going on with Andrew. And you had some stuff about the workouts also. So, take over on hoops and take the reins here, Dustin.
Yeah, so Andrew Jones had a hip procedure. And this one kind of flew away under the radar. I believe I was told it was like late April or early May. Didn't get an exact date. And this is actually something that's been bugging him since he arrived at Texas as a freshman. You know, just something about his hip flexibility, and every now and then there'd be some pain in that area. So certainly not any sort of major procedure at all or anything like that, but it is something that has been bothering him since he's been in Texas. Well, when was he going to get the procedure? After his first year, he was working out for the NBA draft combine and kind of weighing his options there. And then he ended up coming back to school. Okay, it's time to do workouts again and classes and everything else. And then of course his sophomore season, hey, you got to win this battle against leukemia. So not going to do any hip procedure stuff there. And then he gets, you know, over that battle and kicks leukemia's ass and he's back on the court. So this has really been the first true off season he's had an opportunity to elect to have that procedure. And it's just, you know, something with his flexibility, it's caused some pain every now and then, definitely on the minor side of things. But, you know, I remember when we were having a podcast right when all the conference tournaments were getting canceled in basketball. And the first player many of us thought of when all this stuff was happening was Andrew Jones, just because of the risk he was at, the elevated risk, since he is a guy that was, you know, winning a battle against leukemia. I've always kind of wondered, like, is he going to be back on campus? Like, how is he going to handle things? So he's actually been rehabbing and all that sort of stuff at his home or near his home in the Dallas area. He's a guy that you never have to worry about him getting work in on his craft. I mean, there are images and videos of him, you know, playing pickup games real thin with like one of those medical bags for his cancer treatment. So getting the work in is never going to be an issue with Andrew Jones. And that continues to be the case. But it's just one of those things. He's rehabbing a little bit just from that hip thing. And also, too, I imagine it's probably a little bit safer, you know, for him with the exposure and things like that, to kind of hang out there while Texas, from the workout side, can't do 5-on-5 activities yet. So when the NCAA first cleared programs to get back on the court again, which I believe was something like July 19th or around that date, they left it up, like they've done with everything. They left it up to the universities to come up with their own individual plans about how they want to go forward with this. So a lot of programs, you see pictures of Oklahoma State and Texas Tech and OU, they had basically their whole teams out there from day one. But Texas was like, no, we're going to do one player, one ball, one coach at a time. That's all you can do. We're going to try this out for 2 weeks. We're going to make sure everything's okay, and then we're going to progress from there. So those 2 weeks have passed, and now Texas is in a position where they can have four players on a court at a time with that coaching staff. So Shocker Smart and his assistant coaches, Jay Lucas, Neil Berry, and right now Cody Hatt, who is basically they're acting as an assistant coach because they haven't filled that position yet. He's normally the director of basketball operations. So they progress their workouts there. Just they can only have four players on the court at a time. They get 4 hours a week for those coach-led activities, and then the other 4 hours a week are dedicated to the strength and conditioning work with Andrea Hootie and her staff and that sort of thing. So Andrew Jones in Dallas. Kai Jones has been working out in Orlando. I don't know specifically why, but I know that Texas is – you know, I was told a while back that the probably mandatory isn't the best word to use for these things because it's just such an unusual time that
They just want to make sure guys are comfortable getting their work in. And I know that Kai and Andrew both have been in constant communication with their Zoom, phone, whatever, with Shaka Smart and the coaching staff or the strength and conditioning staff about what they're doing. And they're really, really pleased with the work those guys are putting in. So basketball progressing up to four guys on the court at a time. I'm not sure when they'll be able to actually have any sort of five-on-five or things like that. But they're just – kind of like the rest of us, you know, people don't realize that that basketball is not too far off in the distance. You know, it doesn't start that far behind football season or during normal times. So I think everybody's kind of hoping that football can get going, then they'll see what happens with basketball as well. But those guys are on the court doing some workouts. And it could be, speaking of recruiting too, it could be it's been pretty active.
We'll just skip Dustin's.
All right. Well, so Dustin's parting shot will be no shot. How about that? Because Dustin's parting shot will be he needs to go to Best Buy and get some new equipment because right now it sucks. So you guys have had zero time to prepare. So Alex, I'll give you a little bit of time. I'll go to Jason. What is your parting shot?
Not much. You know, someday we'll get smart and actually prepare these or have something in mind before you we would start think, recording.
Because every time we're always like, I don't know.
I hadn't thought about it. No, man, my kids started school. It's two of my four kids started school today. Like literally last night, like at 9 o'clock, my wife and I are at Walmart picking up some last minute crap that the kids needed for school. And we got a text message from the Leander School District saying, hey, Rouse High School, classes have been canceled for Thursday and Friday due to some technology issues, so they won't start on Monday. So needless to say, my sophomore and my daughter, who's freshman, this will be her first day of high school, should have been today. They were excited because they got to sleep in today. But, yeah, I'm like, oh, this is just off to a great start. So high school classes got canceled. We have three school-issued computers, and all three of them have had issues. We had to go swap out my daughter's computer this morning at 7:30 for a new one. It seems to be working well enough for now, but I don't know, man. Interested. This is, I know we did kind of virtual schooling at the end of last year, but not really. Nobody really did anything. They just tinkered around their computers for like an hour. But this time, man, and they're like, how old's Max? Is he in, what grade's he in?
He's a second grade. So,
are y'all doing virtual schooling today?
Man, we're doing homeschooling.
Okay. Well, we're doing homeschooling,
which is the same thing. I mean, it's
basically
it was basically, I figured he's going to be homeschooling this year. So it's either homeschooling through the Leander ISD or homeschooling through another program. So I just chose another program.
Okay. Yeah. We're doing the Leander ISD, and it's interesting. I mean, they're starting like regular time. My fourth grader started at 7:50, I think. And my seventh grader started at 8:15, but I mean, they're getting up at normal hours. They're getting dressed or eating breakfast. It's other than going to campus. And again, we're halfway through the first day. So let's not even halfway through, but let's see how it goes. But I mean, they're on these computers doing work from 7:45 till 2:50, just like a normal class day, which I kind of like because frankly, my kids got freaking lazy over the last 5 months. So, and my kids are pissed off, but we like set some parameters like, no, no phones. You're going to get up and get dressed. You're going to eat lunch when they say on your regular lunch break. Your door to your bedroom stays open. You're not just going to sit in there and play around. So we're trying to treat it as much. We went and bought them, I think I mentioned this last week, some $40 desks at Walmart. So each kid has a desk in his or her room. We're trying to treat it as much as a regular school experience as we can without them having to actually go into the campus. But, hey, man, so far they haven't barged in on me while we're recording this podcast, so things must be going okay to this point. So that's my parting shot. Not that interesting, sorry, but just interesting times and just trying to learn on the fly like most of the rest of the world.
Of course, they know you're going to be unavailable for an hour, so that's probably for the time for them to get on their phones and text message their friends.
Take a nap. Who knows what they're doing?
He's going to be doing that podcast or 9:30 to at least 10:30. We can totally do nothing.
Screw around, yeah.
don't view it as a huge victory, Jason.
But I like that the teachers are making – like even my daughter, her first period – this is my middle school daughter – was athletics. And no, man, you got to show up on that Zoom meeting or you're counted absent and it'll be a failing mark for the day. So there is some accountability. You can't just, who knows? I mean, She may just show up for the Zoom meeting and do her nails or something. I don't know. But at least they're making them accountable where they have to show up.
If a kid gets in trouble through these virtual schools, like, how do they discipline them? Do they, like, you can't have internet access? Like, you know, how do you suspend a kid virtually? Do you not allow them to go into a classroom? How does that happen?
I don't think you can. I'll have to take care of it myself. Email me, teacher, if you happen to listen to this podcast.
All right, Alex, you got a good parting shot?
No, I'm like Jason. I don't think about this stuff beforehand. And the only thing I can really think of is that, I would give advice to anybody. If you feel like you have a little portion of underground area on one of your larger retaining walls, and you think it's rotten, I wouldn't go excavate that area to investigate, because you're going to end up with a huge project on your hands. I'm still doing mine. I'll take a photo and share with you guys what it looks like now, but I think I'm maybe about halfway done since last weekend. When we were on this podcast last week, I just kind of started messing around with it. Now it's like a full blown, you know, I have wood deliveries coming, and I have, it's all like gravel having to come in, and just all the rest of this stuff. Man, it's turned into a trip, but at least I'll be getting it done for a lot less than I would have. I figure I'll get this thing done with materials for, like, I was hoping I could just do it for just like, I could get everything, just do it with my labor and see if I could get materials for basically for free. And it's too much. I'm not going to be able to get that done. So, thinking maybe, $400, but I do have a neighbor who is a landscaping guy and does a lot of this stuff. And he told me if I would have just hired him to do it, this would have been, $3,500. So I've saved some money if I could finally get this thing done and finished. But there's just a few technical things, like, the French drain that goes, people don't care, but it's basically, man, like, don't bite off more than you can chew with these home improvement projects. It's especially when it's 107 goddamn degrees outside. It's like, this hasn't been a great idea. But
all right, yeah, you're right. That wasn't really the greatest parting shot, Alex. You've done better.
Well, like I told you, man.
I'm just joking with you. I'm just joking.
Get him fired up, Anwar. Get him.
He usually gets. He hasn't been fired up in a long time, though. Like
how do you get fired up, man? I'm happy about everything. How about this? What about some other stuff? What about George Kittle? He just got double the guaranteed money of any other tight end in the league. Double. Wow. Just like that guy. Wow. I said since the very beginning, George Kittle, his agent's going to laugh. Austin Hooper got that deal last year where it made him the highest paid guy in the league, and people got on Twitter and started chirping like, that's going to set the deal for George Kittle. I said, if you guys think George Kittle's agent's going to come to the table with John Lynch and talk about Austin Hooper's contract, you're crazy. He plays a different position. He's a different kind of dude. He's going to have his own, like, what these tight ends are making right now is going to have no effect on George Kittle. And, the other thing I'll say too, one other thing, is that Florida State and Mike Norvell or these players or whoever, man, I wish Dustin was still on board. I'm not sure he is. I'd like to ask Dustin what he thinks about Florida State. But this news that's come in during the recording of the podcast, that the players are getting on Twitter and complaining about how they're not getting tested for COVID and all this stuff like this. For one, if that's true, it's egregious. And, like, Florida State needs to get their shit together, or they're going to ruin the season for everybody. Like, the protocols need to be in place across the board for all three conferences. And if anybody deviates from them, or if anybody does anything stupid or silly, like skirting these tests, they should be up for all the public shaming in the world. They need to be held accountable, not only by the players' families, but also by the fan bases and everything else. It's not going to be acceptable to skirt any of these protocols. This is too much of a tightrope that we're walking. With that being said, Florida State has a bit of an issue with these players not talking directly to their coach and going just taking to social media, and then having it something that they go and have to clean up later. I don't think it's a symptom of just society as a whole, even though it's probably a little bit more likely now that players would use this as a way to express their concerns or their grievances. I think it says a lot for the culture that's been created though, by Mike Norvell there at Florida State, that it seems like every time there's an issue comes up, whether it's Marvin Wilson, whether it's now these players, like they don't feel comfortable going and talking to their coach directly about it, and they have to air their grievances live on Twitter. We have now players bickering back and forth on social media about the testing that is and or isn't taking place. It seems dumb to me. And it seems dumb to me for, on the part of the players, but the more that you think about it, it has to have at least, you know, an even portion of the blame, if not more, needs to be put on the coach. For one, if this is happening, he's being a total donkey and a dumbass, and this needs to be addressed immediately. But even if it's not happening, it still falls on the coach because he's created a culture where these guys don't feel comfortable coming and talking to them and don't feel accountable to, you know, one another as far as keeping things in-house.
We don't even know if Dustin's even on this call or not. So
I am. I think I figured out the issue. I was reading Warren Thompson's statement today, and he didn't like allege anything about testing. He just said that he'd felt he'd been lied to by leaders about the health. And then I guess Norvell had a scheduled press conference today just in general and was asked about it. And he talked to Warren Thompson last night, and, you know, Marvin Wilson and a bunch of players are on Twitter saying that they feel safe and everything's fine. So I don't know what's going on there. I just know that we're in an era right now where college football players more and more voicing whatever they want to voice on Twitter about anything. And that's just kind of the reality right now. But
you don't see the Alabama players doing it. I'll say that much, right?
Well, I mean, we see Texas players do it recently.
I just don't see many Clemson players doing it. I don't see many Alabama players doing it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a fair point, but I don't know what he's saying or what's going on, but he just said that he felt he was lied to about people's health during the camp. So I'm not really sure what that even means, but it seems like he might be on an island there.
It was the mother of one of the other players, like Tamarian Terry or whatever his name is, like maybe his mom, saying saying that they're not doing testing and stuff. So it's just a whole lot in the FSU Twitter sphere. I feel like some of that just comes, it feels like a little bit of a chaotic culture. That's all.
It's kind of hard to have a culture with a new head coach when you can't even, this is the first time I've really been around. It's not a good time to try to establish anything like that, especially if you're taking over for a dumpster fire situation. So, don't have high expectations for that program this year.
Well, since you're here, Dustin, why don't you go ahead and give us your parting shot?
Yeah. I don't really have a whole lot in terms of the parting shot or whatever. We talked about basketball. There's really nothing going on, from the college baseball perspective with Texas, and those guys. I do think, you know, speaking of basketball, and this might be something I'm going to try to touch on in the war room a little bit more. I think basketball, unlike football, is going to try to be proactive about this coronavirus situation and, you know, try to get out in front of if they need to have some sort of different schedule or alternative or whatever it is to make a basketball season work. I think that they're going to do a better job of being proactive in that regard and at least – discussing a bunch of options. You know, it seems like there's been, some buzz, at least for a little while, about just people picking each other's brain and coaches talking to coaches and about how to try to make sure that they have a basketball season. So I think that's going to be something to follow in the coming months is, you know, as football hopefully kicks off, what's going to be the situation for basketball? Because it's one thing if there's some conferences not playing football, but from an NCAA perspective, if the NCAA doesn't have a March Madness again, that might be the death of the NCAA. I mean, that brings in so much money for that organization. Somebody brought up to me the other day, like people don't realize that, you know, all those conference tournaments that the NCAA puts on for the conferences, big, small, medium, whatever, in college basketball. I mean, there's 300 plus Division I college basketball teams. That's a lot of conference tournaments. The NCAA basically pays to put those on with March Madness. that, I mean, that they get so much money from that tournament that it's really the key thing that keeps them functioning. So it's going to be an interesting time as basketball kind of comes onto the horizon about how they're going to try their season. The NCAA needs a college basketball season. It needs a March Madness, or it could run into a situation where it might be the beginning of the end for that organization.
Yeah, that would be tough. I mean, first of all, it seems like, Dustin, that this should be the beginning of the end of the NCAA in general.
Right.
I mean, right. Just in general, just be when we start looking at this organization doesn't really do anything as it relates to football. I mean, and we see the chaos that has occurred. And I understand that it would have been hard to get all of its member schools on the same page. But knowing that it's run by the presidents and everyone's doing their own individual things, like, and not having one overseeing body, just from this perspective shows that, okay, they're somewhat useless. But then at that point, if you can't even have a conference tournament, then it's just like, you might as well just blow it up at that point.
Yeah, it's, you know, the NCAA is already hiding under the bed from any decision-making process and just basically telling everybody to do whatever they want to do. But yeah, it's a tricky situation for the NCAA because, you know, what if some of these major conferences in college basketball are like, you know what? We don't need the NCAA. We can kind of just do our own thing and have our own schedule and have our own tournament, and we'll definitely find the TVs to cover it. So it's a really interesting time for the NCAA. I think that we've seen some signs early on about people just asking questions about why do we need the NCAA if they're not helping guide us through any of this process. And then once basketball comes up, that could intensify even more.
All right. Well, my parting shot is this. This will be my neighbor mosquito update thing. So I put it on the board on Friday. After I talked about it on Thursday, I put something on the board a little bit later that just kind of get everyone's advice. And most people were saying, don't worry about them. Tell them to go to hell, so on and so forth, right? And I was kind of down with that. And then on Friday, you know, I get this vague kind of email. I think it was either Thursday or Friday something called chemical trespass, and it was this like warning that he might sue me for something called chemical trespass. And I talked to an attorney about it, and he was like, you know, we could definitely take the case on. It's like, it's not an issue. It's blah, blah, blah. And I just weighed it. And I was just like, I just have way too many other things that to do in life and way too many other things I got to focus in on life. So one of the people on OB actually recommended a mosquito company that actually puts these like big bowls on your property, and it would kind of solve this fumigating, smoking type of thing that normally they when they put those big ass jet packs and just start spraying everywhere. So decided to go, you know, with that. But in the process, when I did let my neighbor know that, and he decided to let me know that that's what I should have done in the first place, I pretty much told him he was an asshole. I told him to go F off. I told him he was a condescending dick. I pretty much told him everything that I wanted to say and let it out. He wanted to come back in this weird type of let's just shake hands, but he did it in a condescending way where he's like, he highlighted sentences that he said in previous emails, and it's like, that's what you should take from it. And I was like, you know, even in your apology, you're still an asshole. So actually, do yourself a favor. Just understand where we are. There are no subliminals here. I am being very direct with you. Go fuck yourself. Never talk to me again. Move on in life. So I will spend, now that's curse jar, swear jar worthy. So I will spend the time that I do have looking into shade trees that I can put on my property because, you know, I need a lot of shade. And if it just so happens, so it inadvertently affects the things that you're growing that you were such a dick to me about and such an asshole about, so be it. So that's where my energy will now be spent because sometimes it's just, I'll take a slow revenge over the instant gratification that I could have gotten. And with that, thank you for taking in the Ticket City podcast. Who's laughing? Hey, listen, Alex, that's where I'm going. I'm going with it. Like, Alex, I've just decided that shade trees of just that'll probably be worth more to me than going to court and trying to fight an unnecessary battle. I just,
it's okay. I'll get you later. I'll get you back.
And then you can add some value to your property on top of it, man. Absolutely. Everybody loves some nice shade trees.
Absolutely. Back. And oh, I'm sorry your cucumbers aren't growing, but I'm doing nothing wrong as long as it's not on your property. So we'll play that.
Put an armadillo in his yard. Let it tear up his garden.
Sometimes I catch
armadillos and possums tearing on my yard. I got a trap. Next time I catch one, I'll bring it to your place and we'll throw it in his backyard.
Well, they do have a trap in their backyard.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah, they do. But that's okay. You know, here's the bad part about all the good vindictive ideas that were out there. I was like, well, any cop is going to see this and know I was the guy that did it, because they're going to look at OB and realize like this is what happened. Like people are like throw
four pages of evidence.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, this is what you should have private messaged me. You can't put this out in public. Now I'm screwed. I can't do it now. So the armadillo, I can't do it now. But if you have any other great ideas, no, I'm just saying shade trees to enhance my property value, some shrubs. Like I think all that would be great. To go on my side of the property. So that's what I'm looking to, and that's what's going to be my new investment. And on that note, guess what? We talked about the Ticket City podcast and how Ticket City would actually have a day where they can actually sell tickets again. Well, it looks like that day should be upon us. So make sure you check out the good folks at Ticket City. There's not going to be a lot of tickets out there. So that means when you have to go secondhand and screw the StubHubs and everybody else, go to Ticket City. They're going to be able to have you. They're going to be able to hook you up. So Jeff Ketchum wasn't here, but he'll probably be back next week. I thought we had a fantastic pod. So make sure everybody get hype about football season. Alex will probably have a depth chart or practice breakdown. Dustin will have his basketball and his football insight. Jason's going to have his recruiting stuff. I have my inside information, Sunday Pulpit. So we're good to go. We got a current promo. Jason, what's our promo that we got going on before I get off the podcast? What's our current promo?
Oh, I put him on the spot. It expires tomorrow, actually, so we need to extend it. But
yes.
I don't even remember what the details are.
Well, we have a promo that no, none of us
all been, we've all been tweeting. We don't even know what to say.
Everyone's hitting retreat.
30-day free trial. Use the promo code 30TEXAS, no spaces. 30
That's what I was gonna,
Texas.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Wow. On that note, thanks for checking out the Ticket City podcast. We'll talk to you soon.